This is Guildcast, episode 32 for June 10th, 2006. Hey everyone, welcome back to Guildcast. I'm your host, Sean, and in this episode, I'm going to discuss Infusion. What it means, where to get it, and why you need it. First, though, I had a few other things I wanted to talk about. The Guildcast Guild is growing slowly but surely. We're now a Curzic Guild and have joined the alliance of Lady Senea's Guild. I also recently set up a vent server for us, which should help out a lot for the GVGing that I'm looking forward to, thanks to the expertise of a few members like the Shadowed Blade and the Shining Shield. I'm getting some tournament entries trickling in. I wanted to say also that I'm going to be announcing this tournament on the major forums next week, but I wanted to give the listeners first choice of spots before the others joined up. The Warrior Division and the 2v2 will probably be the first to fill up, you know, the way things are going now, so keep that in mind. A few people I've talked to in-game this week who asked to be mentioned are Skits Emo, Serpent Master, and Silius Gord. Now, I know I've been slacking on contests lately. I think it's been over a month since I've done one. But that was mainly because I was getting this tournament business settled in. And now that the rules have been written for the tournament and the applications are coming in, I'll be doing more contests before the tournament starts. But don't expect any or many, at least, during the tournament itself. The next contest I'll be having will be held on Sunday, June 18th at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, and 1 a.m. Greenwich Mean Time. It'll be a trivia contest held in Sarlacc Sanitarium, International District 1. Now remember, the rules have changed, and I'll be doing it like I did the last one a while back in Ice Caves, where you won't be joining my party, but I'll be asking the questions in the trade channel, and players will answer in the all-chat channel. Also, Lady Senea has created her own Name That Place contest in the forums that she'll talk about a little bit later. It'll be running until June 18th, and she'll be choosing the first and second place winners randomly from all the winning entries, so that it can give players a chance to win who may not see the post right away. The PvP contributor position that I announced a few weeks ago is shaping up really nicely. I've gotten about 24 or so really good applicants that I've sifted through, and I'll still give this another week before I make a final decision, but I've got a really solid idea of who I'll choose right now. I was originally going to submit this to the major forums like Guild Wars Guru, GWOnline.net, but then I decided that I wanted someone who is interested in the podcast and is a fan of everything that's going on here. Now sure, PvP experience is a huge factor, but I could get the best PvPer in the world for this position, and unless they actually have the interest to record a segment for me, it's a wasted effort. And you know, when I first started this podcast, I knew a small fraction of what I know now about the game, but I was willing to research what I needed for the show, and if I was asked a question that I didn't know, I'd go look for the answer. So, something like this is what I'm looking for in a person. Anyone else who's interested in this can still get their applications in before next week, and I'll announce who gets this position on next week's episode 33. And speaking of PvP, the Guild Wars Factions Championship Season 2 Finals ended this week. You can check out some of the videos of the final battles between Esoteric Warriors and Irresistible Blokes, as well as some of the semi-final playoff videos from other battles, including War Machine and Sacrament of the Waru. You can check out all of these at www.guildwars.com/competitive/videos. I'll put a link to that in today's show notes. Also, I got an email from one of our listeners who I've talked about before, Mr. Monkington. And he's been kind enough to offer up his services to Guildcast listeners, and I thought it was mighty generous of him. And since I'm all about generosity, I'm going to read some of his email here. He says, "I know that there are a lot of people out there who have items which they think are bad but could actually be very, very good, and I wouldn't want the friendly Guildcast listeners to miss out on an opportunity for money. When I get asked for a price check, I spend a lot of time in-game getting the optimum price. I spend half an hour or so in the main GW towns looking for the demand. I then look on the internet at over 20 forums, and then I reach a final price. I was hoping you could read this out on your show and let your listeners know that if they need a price check, then they can always rely on me. There are several ways that they can contact me if you have an item. Email, which is the best option. It's direct, and I don't have to stay on Guild Wars to wait for a PM. My email address is guildcastpricechecker@googlemail.com, and I will check this regularly and post replies as soon as possible. You can always contact me in-game if I am online, but I am busy with out-of-game guild business at the moment, so I might not be online as much. My two in-game name accounts are Mr. Monkington and Pure Expertise. In-game, it's simple to show me the item in the trade window, but for email, the more the better. If you can provide the stats and skin, anything at all, that speeds up the process, for example, simply sending me an email saying the guild cast crusher, Green Hammer, would be rather annoying, but if you provide a screenshot of the skin and the stats, it can really help, and it saves me time searching through GuildWiki. I hope this is a help to some of your listeners. Mr. Monkington. Now, this is a very common topic that I get asked a lot, actually, and I have a section on my forums dedicated to this, and I know I've talked about it before in previous shows also. So this is very generous of him to do this for the Guildcast community. I'm sure I'll be taking advantage of this also. Now, as far as game updates, they had one just recently on Friday, June 9th. They actually, on the website, they say it's Friday, June 8th, but it was the 9th. This is some of the things that they did. I'll just go ahead and read through these. They improved the way henchmen choose to use resurrection skills. They fixed bugs and made improvements to the following quests: Cash Crops, A New Escort, Death with Honor, The Egg Hunter, The Drunken Master, In the Army Now Kurzik, and In the Army Now Luxon. They fixed the merchants and Avatar of Grenth in Pungmei Valley so that they respond to players. They allowed foreign visitors in Xingjie Monastery to enter the Xingjie Arena Outpost. I'll have to check that one out. They added visible resurrection countdown timers to the Jade Quarry and Fort Aspenwood competitive missions. The unyielding aura and vengeance skills now work properly in these missions. They fixed a bug with resurrection timers in alliance battles. They fixed a crash bug relating to the use of several miniature creatures. They fixed a bug that caused Vizuna Square to appear as though it had been completed with a master's reward, when in fact it had only been completed with a standard or expert reward. This caused some players to believe incorrectly that they had completed the Protector of Kantha title. They fixed a bug that prevented some players from correctly unlocking the random arena outpost. And they fixed an exploit related to the use of seeds in the Druid's Isle guild battle map. Also, the guys and gals down at ArenaNet have recently created a new feature for in and out of the game. It's a new publication called The Scribe. According to the website, this is what they say about it. We're happy to unveil a new publication for you. The Scribe is a weekly periodical that will share a few stories from within the game. Written by a traveling monastery scribe, the articles will range from news about the alliance battles to stories about guilds and events. You'll probably see a few kudos to individual players as well. Look for future editions on Thursdays. So I checked this out, and it seems like a great idea, and as you know, I'm a big fan of the lore of Guild Wars, and this plays off of that to make a current event's ongoing lore of sorts. They even occasionally talk about real characters by name when they perform a random act of kindness in the game. In this first issue from June 8th, they actually named three players and the kindness that they've done. So I'll put up a link to this on the show notes for today so you can check it out. In the first Guild Wars, Prophecies, you'll encounter a creature known as the Mersat. The Mersat are a race of powerful spellcasters. They're humanoid in shape and float above the ground dressed in golden attire. The Mersat appear in all forms of spellcasting professions, from monks, mesmers, elementalists, and necromancers. They're also accompanied by jade bows, which are rangers, and jade armors, which are warriors. I'll mention a brief history of the Mersat as it pertains to the storyline. But I might be giving away some spoilers, so if you don't want to hear a storyline spoiler, you can you can cover your ears and say la 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 for the next few minutes, and you won't hear a thing. The Mersat have been worshipped by the White Mantle as the Unseen Ones since Saul D'Alessio first encountered them in the Maguma jungle. And in return for their worship, the Mersat protected the people of Kryta from the Char invasion. The Mersat are aware of the Flame Seeker prophecies that foretell their doom and do everything in their power to prevent the prophecy from being fulfilled. This includes sacrificing the Chosen on the Bloodstones at Maguma and the Ring of Fire Islands, as well as heavily guarding the Door of Kamali. The race of the Seers is an enemy of the Mersat for reasons that are unknown at this time. Hopefully that's something that we'll find out more in later chapters of Guild Wars. The Mersat can be found in the southern Shiver Peaks and the Ring of Fire Islands, and in lore it's said that the Unseen Ones have a city deep inside the Maguma jungle. The ferryman Old Jones speaks of a shadow hanging over the Ullen River, hiding what lies beneath its shores. He says it is cast by something unseen. All Mersat, including the jade armors and bows, possess a special power called Spectral Agony that causes great damage over a short span of time. This attack can bring down the toughest of heroes in seconds. Fortunately, there is a method to protect you from this devastating skill, and it's called Infusion. Infusion is the process of saturating a set of armor with magic that shields against Spectral Agony. An armor with this magic is said to be infused. All armor can be infused. When a Mersat's Spectral Agony attack strikes a piece of infused armor, the damage is greatly reduced. And many players believe that their character itself is infused, but it's the armor that the character is wearing at the time of infusion that is affected only. To get your armor infused, you must seek out a Seer and give it the spectral essence of an Edelon, which is a creature that looks like a giant floating squid. This is first explained in the Iron Mines of Maladun mission. The Seer will inform you about the location of the Edelon and ask you to slay it and bring back its essence. This same process is repeated at a few other locations. The Seer, once given the essence, will then infuse the currently worn armor set of every member in the party who speaks to it. And that's important, you gotta remember to speak to the Seer. But take note that because the spectral essence is an item that a party member has to carry in their hands and not in the inventory, it can't be transported from one place to another. So every time you want to get infused, you'll have to find a Seer and an Edelon to kill. Here are some tips to keep in mind concerning infusion. Infuse each piece of armor you want to wear. Aside from the missions, there are Mersat in many explorable areas in the southern Shiver Peaks and Ring of Fire Islands, which I'll talk about more in a second. If you keep multiple sets of armor or change your armor later in the game, you must come back and infuse the new set to survive against the Mersat. None of the armors in the game start infused, not even the most expensive ones. Only armor you are wearing when talking to the Seer is infused. Items in your inventory will not get infused. Make sure you have the correct pieces equipped. Thunderhead Keep is the first outpost where henchmen start with infused armor because it's the mission directly after the Iron Mines of Maladun. As of January 26, 2006, when the Seer infuses your armor, your henchman's armor will be infused as well. This is usually only relevant for the Iron Mines of Maladun mission. Pets do not get infused, so they will die very quickly if Spectral Agony is cast on them. So it's wise for rangers, primary and secondary, to not bring their pet as it will only hinder them. It appears that the Titans are infused or have something more powerful as they can easily wipe out Mersat without taking much damage. Now, as for infusion locations, there are four in all. The first one, as I mentioned, is in the Iron Mines of Maladun mission. This is the most popular place for infusion, and it's usually done with a run since it's a separate part from the mission or the bonus. You can either buy a run, get a group together to run it, or try to fight your way to the Seer. So if you decide to run it yourself or with a group, here are some tips. As you begin, you'll face a group of Fighting White Mantle and Stone Summit. Just ignore them and run down the hill to the left. At this point, you'll see an icy path to your right, as well as White Mantle forces ahead of you. Take the icy path, which leads you around a mountainous road filled with scores of tundra giants, mountain trolls, blessed griffins, and azure shadows. As you make your run north, you'll come across a bridge defended by siege weapons operated by White Mantle. At this point, turn left at the fork on the bridge and follow the path. Azure Shadows will be guarding the Cave of the Seer, so keep that in mind. If you're chased by monsters as you approach the Seer and you don't want to fight them, then make sure you tell all party members to skip the cinematic. This causes all the party to teleport to the Seer, and the monsters will stop where they were when the cinematic began. And the reason you want to do this is because if you don't skip the scene, some of the monsters will sometimes catch up to you while you're watching the scene, and they may either kill you or dwindle down your health a lot. It's best to run as a closely packed group and not be spread out. A tight group tends to split the attention of monsters, trying to attack you as you run past. And this will spread the damage being dealt between the party members. This is especially true for the last part, right in front of the Seer's Cave, where you'll need a few people running together through the numerous groups of Azure Shadows. They inflict armor-ignoring damage using knockdown, and then they overwhelm a single downed target. Henchmen make terrible runners. The fighters will try to engage, and the healers will try to heal those who suffer the damage. So if you have both a healer and fighter henchman in your party, they'll get caught up fairly easily and die. Now as for another location for infusion, you can go in the northeasternmost section of Mineral Springs, and there's a seer up there. The Eidolon in that area is right next to it, and it's called an Ice Beast. You'll go through the cave occupied by ice imps, and then up a ramp where the Ice Beast can be found in a tight tunnel. Immediately beyond it is the seer. This area is also the only known area where icy dragon swords drop. The third location for infusion is at the seer in the Ring of Fire mission. Infusion is basically the bonus for this mission, so you're killing two birds with one stone here. If you clear the area before talking to the seer, you'll only have to fight the Eidolon to get his essence. This area is not as favored as the first two in getting infusion because of the fact that you'll encounter Mersat and Jade before getting to the seer. The fourth location of a seer for infusion is in the Abaddon's Mouth mission. This is also not a highly favored method of infusion due to the fact that you'll encounter Jade and Mersat before you reach the seer, just like in the Ring of Fire mission, and the seer is located so far away from the rest of the mission and bonus that it's actually not really worth it.
Hey all, this is Lady Sinea bringing you the word on the street. I have a story about infusion, or rather, a story about not being infused. Usually I'm really good about checking to see if I have any uninfused pieces of armor, but there was this one time that it just totally slipped my mind, and it really shouldn't have. On most of my characters, I have more than one headpiece, and I swap them in and out as I see fit, depending on what build I'm playing. So on missions where you can get infused, I always check to see if I have any uninfused armor so that I can make sure I get all of my headpieces infused. Well, I almost always check. On this one day in question, I whispered Sean and asked him what he was up to, and he said that he was about to go do the Ring of Fire mission with a couple of guildies, and I said, "Ooh, can I come along? I need that bonus." So I grabbed my ranger, and I didn't even think about infusion, probably partly because I was just stoked that Sean and I had a chance to play together, which actually is kind of a funny story in itself, because I'd been on Guildcast maybe a month, maybe two, and it occurred to me one day, hey, you know, we've been emailing each other and even sort of know each other from this little show here, but we've never actually even played together. I can actually literally count the number of times that we have played together in-game on two hands. So yeah, sometimes I get people asking me that if the next time I see Sean, can I relay a message to him, or they want to give me a donation for the contest prizes so that I can give it to him. But I always have to say no, because I hardly ever see him. So yeah, don't try to give me stuff to give to Sean, because it's likely that you will see him before I ever do. So anyway, we're going to go do this mission, and as we're standing around in town, rounding up some of the Losties and a few of my guildies, I'm flexing and showing off my new fissure armor. And yeah, it should have occurred to me around this time that I had uninfused armor on, but I guess I just didn't think of it. So we went into the mission, and I started getting hit pretty hard right in the beginning, but I managed not to get killed, which is one of the beauties of being a long-range damage dealer. And I kind of vaguely wondered about that, but it wasn't until we got to the next group of Mersat that I realized, oh, the only piece of infused armor I have on is my mask. But I kept my mouth shut. This was also the first time I ever played with anyone from Lost, and I was thinking, oh great, what a great first impression. They're gonna kill me. But most of the mission was fine, and I was able to pull everything without much trouble. But when we encountered some jade armors, I would back off and let the tank pull instead. But then, at last, there was a point where my party wanted me to pull some of the Mersat, and I had to admit to them that I wasn't going to because I didn't have any of my armor infused. So they razzed me for a bit about that, but they were cool about it. And Sean called me a noob, of course. So that was my uninfused story, and I guess it was pretty unexciting too. But anyway, there's one mission bonus that's kind of hard to hench because of the infusion factor, but it's still possible to do it. I'm talking about the Ice Caves bonus, and there are Mersat there that you have to fight. I have a guildie who did it by himself, but if you have two people, it's a lot easier. You can have one person hang back and keep the henchies away, and you can just tap your movement keys, sidestepping or whatever, and that'll keep the henchmen there because they'll follow you if you're moving around more. And then have the other person go forward and start attacking the Mersat. And then, once you've got some damage dealing going, I'd say send the henchies in after that to help finish them off. And your henchmen are going to die at times, of course, so you'll want to be able to resurrect them. And you can attack other monsters along the way to help get rid of the henchy's death penalty, but it's not too bad to get through if you don't rush in too much. This week, in factions, I was going to go check out the Deep, and I ended up not going, but I noticed that the town is now being held by a different alliance. Last time I checked, Keys now has control of it. Also this week, I made a formal complaint to Guildcast for allowing the release of Sean's video of the Ritualist to the song My Humps. It's ruined it for me. I cannot look at a Ritualist without thinking of that song now. So when I created a Ritualist this week, I finally decided, alright, if you can't beat him, join him. So my Rit's name is She's Got Me Spendin'. And I got the Survivor title with him, which is kind of cool. I took him over to Tyria and did some missions over there, and I also did some traveling east, heading from Lion's Arch toward Ascalon. And even though I know the way really well, it was still kind of bizarre going backwards through the game, but it was fun anyway. Some of the things that I've noticed with factions coming out are the prices of things. Ecto is going back up, and most of the runes have dropped in price. It seems that generally the cost of the profession-specific runes have gone down, and really the only valuable ones now are the vigors. Even a minor vigor is now like 1k, and I used to merchant them for like 25 gold. So because of the prices of these profession runes, if you've ever wanted to make a 55 monk but you didn't have the cash to do it, now is the time to do it. Except for the healing rune, all of the monk superior runes are under 2k, even if you just buy them straight for the trader. So that's about it for me this week, but I did want to let you know that the Name That Place contest is going on right now, and you have until midnight Eastern Time on June 18th to submit your entries. So go check it out. They're on the forums, look at the pictures, and email your answers to me, and then in a couple of weeks, I will announce our winners. So until next time, this has been Lady Sinea bringing you the word on the street.
For this skills and build segment, I'm going to do something a little different. I'm not going to talk about a skill that can be used by you, the player, but instead I'm going to talk about a spell that can only be used by a foe, and the spell that's actually the whole reason for infusion. Of course, that spell is Spectral Agony, which is used by the Mersat, Jade Armor, and Jade Bow. Now, even though it seems a waste to talk about a spell that you can't even really use, I thought it might be a good idea to get a better understanding of how this spell works and how it pertains to infusion. The description for the spell is, for 5 seconds, target foe suffers 1 to 24 health degeneration. They move, attack, and use skills up to 80% slower than normal, and loses 3 to 81 health each second. Spectral Agony can very quickly kill an unprotected character. To make things worse, Mersat and Jade enemies will use this skill frequently. The only way to protect against it is infusion. Infusing your armor will reduce all of the effects of Spectral Agony to very manageable levels. There's actually a lot of research that's gone into infusion versus spectral agony and the effects that each piece of armor has in relation to this. For example, if you have no piece of armor infused at all, you can take 100 points of direct damage per second. Mixed with the max net health degeneration of 10, you can take a total of 600 points of damage from one cast of spectral agony. In turn, if you have all 5 pieces of armor infused, you will only take 9 points of direct damage a second, with the health degeneration of 3, and a total damage output of 75, which actually isn't too bad, really. The exact slowing effect of spectral agony is unknown. When wearing a fully infused set, little or no slowing is experienced. With each piece less, a character suffers from progressively worse slowing. Spectral Agony's direct damage ignores armor just like Obsidian Flame and Crystal Wave, but unlike most other skills, no type of magical resistance is effective against it. This means that infusion is the only protection, and any infused piece of armor is effective as another. Shields, which feature damage reduction, can reduce the damage done by Spectral Agony, so keep that in mind. It's quite difficult to prevent spectral agony through most of the usual skill prevention methods. It's not a spell, so most interrupts won't work against it, and it's cast very fast, about 1/2 a second activation, which means that even skill interrupts have a high chance of failure. Well, I think I'll go ahead and wrap the show up. Again, make sure to mark your calendars for the next trivia contest on Sunday, June 18th at 8 p.m. Eastern, as I mentioned earlier. Also, be sure to get your entries in for the scrimmage tournament before June 30th. You can find that entry application on the forums under the board Tournaments. And if you'd like to contact either of us, you can check out the contact info page off the main website. My email is sean@guildcast.com, and Lady Sinea's is ladysinea@gmail.com. So, until next time, tell your friends and tell your guildmates about guildcast.com.